Good morning, everyone, and welcome to our results presentation for the 9 months of 2019. The results will be presented by our Capital Markets Director, Steven Fernández, together with our Controlling Director, John Ganuza, and our CFO, Carlos Álvarez. At the end of the presentation, as always, we will open it up for live Q&A, and with further addition, I will hand it over to Steven for key highlights.
All right. Thank you, Abel. Hi, good morning, everyone. We're going to start off the presentation that you've received, and you should have seen as well in our website on the CNMV, starting with the key highlights on page four. Now, you've seen that the first 9 months of the year have been marked by quite relevant headwinds and a challenging energy scenario. But despite this, the business has demonstrated remarkable resilience and has achieved ordinary growth of 5% versus last year. Now, the results have been supported by regulatory stability during the period, recognizing prior FX and inflation movements in LATAM, as well as our continued efforts in the de-risking of our merchant activities and the efficiencies across the businesses. In terms of investments, the period marks a milestone for the company, which has invested close to 400 million euros in the development of renewable projects. And it's worth noting that this is the highest level in the company's history. Indeed, Naturgy has become one of the leading investors in clean technologies in Spain in the year 2019. And this is, we believe, a testament of our commitment to support the energy transition. Overall, the company has invested more than 1.1 billion euros in the period, thus reinforcing its industrial positioning and the future growth prospects, particularly in renewables. We have also continued to progress on the optimization of our business portfolio based on strict capital discipline. And as such, on October the 1st, the group completed the disposal of Transemel, an electricity transmission subsidiary in Chile, for a multiple of around 23.5 times 2018 EBITDA. Part of this transaction, CGE will receive proceeds of around 116 million euros, that's 116. Likewise, on 15 October of this year, the company has reached an agreement for the acquisition of 34% stake in Medgas for 445 million euros. Now, this transaction will allow the company to transform its current 15% stake in Medgas from a financial investment with very limited governance rights into a strategic stake, which will allow the joint control of Medgas together with Sonatrach. The acquisition has been agreed at a multiple equivalent to around 6.9 times EV/EBITDA expected in 2021, which, as you all know, includes the approved 2 BCM expansion program of the current pipeline. The latest transactions, we think, demonstrate the company's ability to create value through asset rotation and capital discipline, simplifying our businesses and geographical footprint. On shareholder remuneration, the board of directors has approved a dividend of 47.3 euro cents per share payable on the 12th of November of this year, corresponding to the second interim dividend of 2019. And that comes out of the total 1.37 euros per share dividend committed against the year results. Despite the significant investments made in renewables and electricity networks during the period and the shareholder remuneration commitments, which I may add include the share buyback, the company has managed to reduce its net debt to 15.1 billion euros. Moreover, and as envisioned on its strategic plan on 13 August, we also completed the cancellation of the treasury shares corresponding to the first tranche of our share buyback program, which was equivalent to approximately 1.7% of the share capital of the company, with a corresponding increase, obviously, in earnings per share. Finally, on regulatory developments in Spain, as you are all aware, we submitted a comprehensive set of allegations on 8 August, most of which we have already discussed with you. But in essence, our allegations were grounded on very simple ideas. First, a flawed process and methodology whereby there has been no interaction between the companies and the CNMC. Second, an unjustified over-remuneration thesis based on flawed methodologies, in our view. And finally, an unjustified and abrupt model change with retroactive effects, asymmetrical impacts, and inadequate incentives, which does not provide for sufficient visibility to invest. Now, with that said, we don't have more visibility in the potential outcome of the CNMC proposals, but I can only reemphasize our commitment to adapt our business to whatever is required. And that is in order to protect profitability and the interests of all our stakeholders. If we move over to page 5, EBITDA in the period reached almost 3.3 billion euros after non-ordinary effects. Stripping these out, ordinary EBITDA rose 5% to almost 3.4 billion euros, mainly supported by regulated activities and the efficiencies across all businesses. Non-ordinary impacts in the first 9 months amounted to 107 million euros, the bulk of which corresponds to capture costs derived from the implementation of the efficiency plan. On the infrastructure side, regulatory stability in LATAM, recognizing FX and inflation movements from the prior year, together with stability in European operations, has contributed to an overall strong performance in the first 9 months of the year. In gas and power, the first 9 months have been driven by an improvement in gas and power services and sales, particularly in power supply, which has nevertheless not been enough to compensate for a challenging scenario in international LNG and Europe power generation. The company's new commercial policies and de-risking efforts, together with efficiencies, have also helped offset the low gas prices in recent months. All in all, the group has shown remarkable resilience, we think, and positive growth despite the significant energy scenario headwinds. If we could turn on to page 6, we analyze the evolution of net income over the period. And you'll see that it's reached 901 million euros, while ordinary income rose 13% to 991 million, supported mainly by the improvement in activity growth. Here again, non-ordinary items mainly relate to the capture costs incurred as part of the efficiency plan. In summary, the ordinary earnings growth supported by activity and despite the difficult energy scenario bodes well for the company's future. Moving on to cash flow and net debt on page 7, we have generated operating cash flow of almost 3.2 billion euros, which is substantially higher than the figure in the previous months. In addition to the strong operating results, the company has also experienced a positive evolution of its working capital, which, as you know, is explained by a number of factors. Some of these effects are related to better working capital management via shortening of receivable days and the extension of payables, as well as to other cash-generating initiatives, including an increased factoring, while other effects are mainly related to seasonality or merely coincidental. CapEx in the period amounted to roughly 1.1 billion euros, mainly reflected ongoing investments in renewable projects, as well as investments in networks. As discussed, we are committed to supporting the energy transition, and we have invested close to 400 million euros in the development of renewable projects in the first 9 months. Again, this is the highest level of investments in this area in the company's history. Also, during the period, we have delivered on our shareholder remuneration commitments. We've paid out approximately 850 million euros in dividends, and we've bought approximately 320 million euros in own shares as part of the ongoing share buyback program. In summary, despite the relevant investments and shareholder remuneration in the period, it's also worth noting that net debt under IFRS 16 was down to 15.1 billion as of the end of the month of September. So with that, I will now hand over to John, who will be reviewing the results by the unit.
Thanks, Stephen, and good afternoon, everyone. Let's now review the operating performance of each of the business units. Starting with gas and power on page 9, ordinary EBITDA was down 4% during the period, reflecting resilience given the challenging scenario vis-à-vis last year. Looking into each of the business units, gas, power and service sales experienced a strong improvement on the back of margin recovery in power supply and efficiencies, having partially offset by increased margin pressures in gas supply. This results improvement is done in the midst of the deployment of a new commercial approach, which has reduced the portfolio of fixed price contracts in power supply and reduced exposure to pool prices, leading to a substantial reduction in volatility, though it has also led to a reduction of our customer acquisition rate from the short term as we are rebalancing our sales channels. In regards to international LNG, the business is still negatively affected by excess gas globally and the consequent low prices. Despite having reduced our open position vis-à-vis previous years, the remaining open position was mainly in oil-related contracts and therefore especially sensitive to relative values of gas spot prices to Brent. During the second quarter and third quarter, JKM and NBP price levels have been in historical lows, especially when compared with the Brent price, reaching all-time lows of 7.5% and 5.8% respectively. Put it into context, historical levels in these same quarters have been at almost 13% and 9.5% respectively. This has led to a substantial margin erosion in our open position, especially when compared with an exceptionally strong 2018. Nevertheless, and given that 95% and 74% of the volumes are secured for 2019 and 2020 respectively, either through physical sales or hedging, we are confident that the contribution will remain positive while providing for a significant improvement in visibility and volatility reduction compared vis-à-vis previous years. Although we would like to emphasize that we are working towards locking in 100% of the margins in the short and the medium term. Power generation in Spain is affected by several factors. First, the loss of competitiveness of coal production has translated into higher CCGTs production, which is now effectively the marginal technology in the daily markets. Second, depressed gas prices and increased competition in CCGTs. These two factors have led to a significant reduction in the clean spark spread and the size of the ancillary services market. Furthermore, the comparison vis-à-vis last year is also negatively impacted by the suspension of CCGT's availability capacity payments and the lower hydro production. Finally, international power generation has performed well on the back of new input capacity, better margins of excess energy sales in Mexico, and favorable evolution of FX. In summary, the challenging scenario in international LNG and Europe power generation has been partially offset by the margin recovery in power supply and efficiencies, as well as the strong performance in international power generation. And already in the fourth quarter, we expect to see a contribution of the new installed capacity of renewables in Spain. Moving now to our infrastructure business unit in EMEA on page 10. Ordinary EBITDA reached 1.5 billion euros, thanks to stability and efficiencies across businesses. More specifically, the improvement in gas, Spain gas networks has been mainly driven by lower OPEX from efficiency and a mild increase in volumes despite the high temperatures during the last winter. In electricity Spain, the positive evolution is supported by efficiencies and additional investments. Finally, ENPL has benefited from the annual tariff increase and favorable FX evolution. As it was already said in the past results presentation, a part of the OPEX improvement in the networks in EMEA and to a lesser extent of gas and power is a result of the change in the role of the corporation. In the first three quarters of last year, the corporation still acted as a shared service center. As far as P&L is concerned, the main impact has been that the line which shows the rest of EBITDA last year had a positive ordinary EBITDA of 43 million euros, while this year that same line has had a negative EBITDA of 44 million euros. As you can imagine, this change is not due to an increase in the cost of the corporation, which actually have been substantially reduced. The bulk of the change is the result due to a reduction of the invoicing that the corporation does to the businesses, mainly to the ones in Spain. In summary, stability and efficiencies across the businesses. Turning now to infrastructure South LATAM on page 11. Ordinary EBITDA amounted to 716 million euros in the period, 10% higher than the previous year, driven by tariff updates and efficiencies, and that despite the negative effect of minus 35 million euros in the period. Overall performance has followed the same trends as in the first half of the year, reflecting tariff updates which recognize the effects and the inflation movement in 2018, as well as efficiencies across businesses. In Chile electricity, tariff indexation and efficiencies have been partially offset by demand growth lower than expected. Regulatory negative adjustment, mainly due to a change in the smart meter rollout plan and effects. The president in Chile has announced a number of possible measures which could potentially affect tariff evolution in the country. For the time being, visibility is reduced. The information we have from a week ago is that the announced tariff freeze only affected the existing generators as they amount to over 70% of the final customer invoice, and not to the distribution and transmission activities. Having said that, we have to stress that currently visibility is limited. In Chile Gas, higher sales and margins and efficiencies. In Brazil, results have also been driven by tariff updates since January and efficiency. Finally, in Argentina, the tariff updates in April and the consolidation of the results in GasNord have been offset by the still significant FX depreciation in the period. All in all, Infra South LATAM has continued to perform well and in line with the previous quarters of the year. Finally, moving into Infrastructures North LATAM on page 12, results have been equally impacted by regulatory updates and efficiencies. Ordinary EBITDA in the period amounted to €281 million, up 46% on the back of positive regulatory impacts, higher demand, and efficiency improvements. In Mexico, the positive evolution was driven by regulatory tariff updates and indexations, together with demand growth and efficiency improvements. In Panama, the positive evolution is explained by the tariff update under the new regulatory period and the higher demand as a consequence of higher temperature compared to last year. Looking beyond the first 9 months and considering the group as a whole, we confirm our 2019 year-end guidance of around €4.6 billion EBITDA and around €1.4 billion net profit, barring, of course, any unforeseen developments. Comparing with the performance in the first three quarters, we expect to see a positive contribution in the fourth quarters in the five following areas. First, as mentioned before, we should see a positive contribution of the renewable capacity that has come online these past few months. Second, gas and power sales in the fourth quarter will have a positive contribution in demand of winter without the ballast that it had in the first quarter due to the legacy fixed-price electricity contracts with negative margin. Third, LNG's fourth quarter, with a greater closed position, should have a much better performance than the one seen in the second quarter and third quarter, even in the dismal commodity scenario that current forwards point towards. Fourth, Chile Electricity should see a positive result due to new transmission assets coming online. And last, the accrual of efficiencies in the fourth quarter, where we do not expect to have any additional capture cost. And with that, I will hand it over to Steven for conclusions.
All right, so thank you very much, John. To summarize the first 9 months of the year, the period has been marked by quite relevant headwinds and a very challenging energy scenario. Despite this, we have continued to improve and demonstrate remarkable resilience in the face of very negative circumstances. In addition, we have accelerated the delivery of the efficiency plan and expect to deliver at least €150 million in efficiencies by year end, which is up 50% from our initial commitment of €100 million for the year. In terms of investments, we have dedicated close to €400 million in the development of renewables in the period, which is the highest in our history. And in fact, it has positioned us as one of the leading investors in clean technologies in Spain in the year 2019, which we think demonstrates our commitment and ambition to be a leading player in the energy transition. On top of that, the company has again proven its ability to create value through asset rotation and portfolio management, showing steady progress in simplifying its business positioning and its geographical footprint, while increasing control in strategic assets, such as the recent agreement to acquire the 34% stake in Medgas, which, again, de facto gives us co-control of a key infrastructure with low risk and stable cash flows. And all in all, as John has just mentioned, we are also today in a position to, once again, confirm our 2019 guidance in terms of EBITDA, in terms of net profit, in terms of net debt. And with that, we thank you all for your attention, and we, at this point, we'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question today, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, that's star followed by two. And when preparing to ask your question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. Finally, we ask that any questions from the press or media are directed to the Naturgy communications team. Our first question today comes from Harry Wyburd of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Harry, your line is open.
Hi there, I hope you can hear me okay, because the line went a bit dead for a second there. So three questions from me. So firstly, on LNG. So I noticed that you said that maritime transport accounted for about 140 million of the EBITDA. So if I've understood that correctly, 70% of your LNG EBITDA is coming from maritime transport. So could you just give us a bit more detail on that business? So what's the capital employed in maritime transport? I presume this is the LNG tankers. And then can non-maritime EBITDA be negative? Because if it can't, then that kind of sets a floor for your annual LNG EBITDA. That's the first one. And the second one, on power and gas sales, I just wondered if we could have a sort of status check. I think you were aiming for about close to 400 million euro EBITDA improvement in that business in your original plan between 2017 and 2022. At your current run rate in this year alone, that should improve by about just shy of 250 million on my math. So how far through the improvement are we? How much more of an improvement could we see in EBITDA from power and gas sales? And then final one, that there were some mentions in the press around the early summer about a strategy update summit that was due to take place, which was then delayed because of the gas regulation. So I wonder, what's on the agenda strategically? Could we expect a kind of strategy update midway through the plan, which would be around next year? Thank you.
So starting with the first question, the EBITDA that you relate to maritime transport is basically due to the long-term leases that we have with the LNG shipping that we have. The non-maritime transport EBITDA that we have is positive, and as far as we can say in the future, we also foresee to see positive. So I think that that is something that will be on top of the EBITDA that we have in the maritime transport. Moving on to the power and gas sales, it's right that we foresee in the capital markets day that we had in London that there was going to be a significant improvement in the EBITDA, but the target that we gave is the target or the commitment for 2022. We are on track with that commitment, and we think that we're meeting the milestones that we foresaw at that time when we set that commitment.
So regarding the third question, first and foremost, we don't comment on press speculation. The reality is that there was no communication from the company on this. What we can tell you is that obviously our company thinks about the future on a constant basis, always thinking about ideas, always thinking about paths that we want to take. We have a strategic plan that goes up until 2022, but I think it would be reasonable for everyone to assume that the world doesn't end in 2022 and that we think beyond 2022. And the thought process guiding the company moving forward, if we think about 23 and beyond, doesn't necessarily start on the 31st of December of 2022. So it is an ongoing process in this company between the different members of the management team, the board, et cetera, where we constantly review where we are and where we want to go. And you can rest assured that when the time is right, we will come to market and explain any changes or any additions to the strategy. For the time being, for all means and purposes, the guiding strategy is based on the 2018-2022 strategic plan.
Our next question today comes from Javier Suarez of Mediobanca. Javier, your line is open.
Hi, good morning to everyone. Three questions on my side as well. The first one is on the cash flow statement. On one of the slides, the one that is detailing the cash flow statement, there is a positive effect on the working capital of 551 million euros. And you are explaining that by a positive evolution of working capital and other seasonal circumstances during the period. If you can clarify to what you are referring to and where that number should be by the year end, from where that positive net working capital effect is coming from. Then the second question is on the ongoing regulatory review. I think that during the presentation you have been very clear saying that you do not have any further information. The question for you is that if you would consider reasonable or part of your proposal is to delay the decision on the gas on the gas networks from end 2019 to end 2020. There has been some news flow on that, and taking into consideration that the new regulatory framework is not due to start until 2021, if you consider that proposal as a reasonable proposal. And then the third question is on the possible agreement with the Egyptian government on Dalmieta. Again, here there has been news flow on the press. If you can elaborate, please, on the current status of this negotiation with the Egyptian government on Dalmieta. Many thanks.
All right, Javier, so three quick questions. On the working capital, what we can tell you is that we don't expect any significant changes from now until the end of the year, and in the Q4. And again, just to reemphasize, some of the effects related to the better working capital are linked to a shortening of receivable days, as we mentioned before. It's also linked partly to some factoring and other elements that are explained in the actual report. On the regulatory review, do we think that it would be reasonable to extend the period of the review? Well, the reality is that in terms of gas distribution, the changes do not come into effect until 2021. So it's clear that there will be time. This time could be used to reach a common position between the regulator, the government, all the different stakeholders. Okay, but we're not going to, assign any statement as to whether or not this is something that we would desire or not. Okay, the reality is we have to deal with what's on the table right now. What's on the table right now is a regulator who is looking to approve some of these changes apparently before year end. So that's the reality. We can speculate about different alternatives, but it would be just that, speculation. On ETET, on Dalmieta, what we can tell you is we continue to work heavily to try to find a solution outside of the court circuit. And beyond that, we're not going to speculate on whatever the press is mentioning. Having said that, it's also worth pointing out that there is a dual track. Our preferred option, again, would be out-of-court settlement, but we are keeping live the other track, which is the one that takes us through the court system. And whereas, we have a favorable ruling from ICSID that eventually could lead to recovering the amount that was awarded to the consortium in many different ways.
Our next question today comes from Manuel Palomo of Exane. Manuel, please go ahead.
Hello, good morning everyone, and thanks for taking the questions. My first question is on guidance. On guidance, you mentioned that, well, you reiterate the guidance and you mentioned several factors such as renewables, gas and power, LNG efficiencies, where you expect some improvement in the Q4. The first thing here is LNG, you said much better than second quarter or third quarter, but could it be, or do you think that it will be in line with the first quarter, because usually the second and third are the weakest? Second question here on guidance is just confirmation whether you are expecting any additional, let's say, one-off, or do you think that anything else will happen that would help you to reach that full-year guidance? Second question is on Chile. well, you have given some color, but I wonder whether you could give us some additional color on that short law that it's apparently that the regulator is working that could lead to a revision of the returns for the distribution. And also wanted to know whether in the third quarter, are you including any impact from this tariff reversal that the government has approved in the last couple of weeks? And finally, this is just a clarification on there is below the EBITDA and others that amount to 20 million euro. It's a positive. I wonder whether you could explain what it refers to. And if I may, last one, you have reiterated all the guidance, but are you still expecting to invest the 2 billion in CapEx that you had announced in the full year results presentation? Thank you.
Hello. And I think that with the guidance, we try to say which are the effects that are going to explain the improvement in the fourth quarter. I mean, LNG, we are not going to give any specific guidance for LNG. We just said which are the qualitative effects that are going to happen and that explain why the fourth quarter should be better than what you get if you just make a linear extrapolation of the accumulated results of the third quarter. So we are not going to detail exactly which is the guidance, but that were for LNG. Moving on to Chile, I think that you have two different questions. The first one was with the tariff review. With the tariff review, as I said, the information that we had, and that's from 1 week ago, is that the announcement that the president made, it only affected to electricity generators, electricity producers. It did not affect to distribution and transmission activities. Having said that, I want to insist that there is a high level of uncertainty in what's happening in Chile, and therefore it's hard to say what's finally going to happen. So that applies also to your question regarding to the third law. We have heard several things, some that are negative, some that are not so negative, and I think that in the current context, it's hard to say what the final outcome is going to be. And regarding to the question that you had on the others, that's basic.
So that's basically 20 million that's linked to the disposal of Torre Mare Nostrum to Inmobiliaria Colonial. And so those are the capital gains. And again, that's detailed on page 6 of the report. On the CapEx for the year, we don't expect to reach the 2 billion guidance. And we would expect to close the year at a level of around 1.7 billion euros.
Our next question today is from Alberto Gandolfi of Goldman Sachs. Alberto, please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my question. Good morning, everybody. The first one is going back again on LNG. I'm trying to figure out one thing. I think this quarter, if I'm not mistaken, you made a bit less than 40 million EBITDA, and last year you were well above 100. And so if we assume, and it's a big if, right, but if we assume that we have not seen the worst yet, and BP is right, yesterday the company was talking about the gas glut oversupply until 2022. And in theory, without everything else being equal, what I'm trying to figure out, are you EBITDA negative on your marginal gas contract? Because if I take your blended supply, oil-linked or Henry Hub-linked, you know, transport, plus you pay liquefaction fees, all of that, I mean, would it be more convenient for you to leave gas at the source and just buy the fee as opposed to bringing it to Europe and trading it? Or am I missing something? So could we see maybe for a year or two, this is very cyclical business, but could we see for a year or two in 21, 22, maybe negative EBITDA from this activity? The second one is, can you maybe, I know you're not going to comment on regulation, but maybe more about your philosophy, your logic, your way of thinking. A 5.8% nominal return, which has been proposed, would still put it, except Italy, kind of at the top of Europe, right? No, again, not Italy, but everything else, you pretty much at the top. So why would you say that you would stop investing? What do you think would be the return that would allow you to to continue to invest in this activity and why, if you really can issue bonds, maybe sub 0.5%. And the last question is, again, sorry, on slide 7 on free cash flow, could you maybe comment, probably totally silly question, so forgive me for that in advance, but there's a 280 million negative other item, and I was trying to I don't quite recall what it is, so if you can maybe tell me about it. Thank you.
Hello. I will start with the second question, the nominal return. We are not going to engage on a public debate about whether 5.8 is good or not. I think that there are two issues, and one of them is the most important and the most relevant one, is that from a methodological perspective, if you look into detail what the CMC is proposing, you are never going to get that 5.8%. So I think that that's something that must be kept in mind. So I think that it's not a matter of whether the regulated WACC is at one level or another. It's what the actual level of profitability that you're going to get. Moving on to your first question, the LNG question. I mean, 2022 is too far away in time, and we are not going to debate about what other companies say about about their outlook of LNG in the short or in the medium term. But I can tell you that for us, first of all, the level, or as we said in the presentation, for this year we have 90% of the volumes covered, and for next year we already have 74% of the volumes already covered. So that gives us a level of comfort saying that next year we're going to have a possibly EBITDA.
The negative 380 million euros in that shows up in the cash flow, and we can give you specific details after if you want, but mainly relates to the difference between the accounting, the accrual, and the actual cash payments. So that's the reconciliation.
Our next question is from Fernando Garcia of RBC. Fernando, please go ahead.
Thank you for taking my questions, and good morning, everybody. My first question is on Argentina. There, the new president program in energy includes energy caps. I would like to understand the implication of this, taking into account the agreement that Naturgy and other gas distribution companies signed with the former administration, and what could be the impact of Naturgy if the new government doesn't make the payments that the last one was committed to do. My second question is, I would like to know, there were a lot of questions regarding LNG, you know, but I would like to know your philosophy in terms of and your positioning in the current situation with very cheap cost of gas short-term, and then probably if you are getting longer-term contracts, probably higher cost of gas. No, what is the positioning there of Naturgy, and if there is any change of the company in terms of strategy about that? No, thank you.
Starting with Argentina, I mean, the government that is coming out, they didn't honor the commitment. So actually, in the past tariff hikes that we should have had, that we had in October 2019 and April 2019, we didn't see the full level of the tariff increase that we should have seen. I mean, can it always be worse? Of course it can be, but let's not forget that that's where we're coming from. And regarding the new government, there's little that we can say. Let's see how it plays out, but let's not forget that we come from the situation where we come from. Regarding LNG, as we have stressed this past year and a half, we have had a substantial change in the philosophy that we had. We came from a position where we felt in the past comfortable having an open position because we thought that on average it made sense and we were willing to assume the increase in the volatility, this past year and a half, we changed substantially, and what we want is to de-risk the business as much as possible. We want to give the decrease the volatility and increase the visibility. And therefore, what we're doing is we're trying to close our position in LNG as much as possible, and that's why periodically we always report about the closed volumes that we have for this year and also for next year. And as I stressed during the emphasized during the presentation, our goal is to have locked in 100% of the margins in the short and in the midterm. And that's right now the philosophy or the strategy that we have regarding the LNG contracts. And I think that in that sense, we've made significant strides. And currently, we can say that for next year, we already have 74% of the volumes that are secured. And when we say that they are secured with a positive margin. So I think that that gives us a nice cushion in which we can go into a scenario that is challenging. And as we've said, and we stressed several times these past few results presentations, we think that no one really has the crystal ball about how it's going to evolve. And we don't want to outsmart the market. We just want to have a line of business that is the risk as much as possible.
Our next question today is from Anna Maria Scaglia of Morgan Stanley. Anna Maria, please go ahead. Anna Maria, your line is open. Please ask your question.
Hi, good morning. Sorry, Anna Maria from Morgan Stanley. Two questions, if I may. The first one, coming back to the LNG, I understand the your talk about the volumes that you've been edging. I was wondering, if you look at the unitary margin on those edge volumes, is there a significant difference between this year and next year? And the second question is about the CCGT production and your electricity business in Europe. And maybe if you can tell us a little bit what you're seeing in terms of, you know, the spreads and as well what's your expectations, particularly for this gas production going forward. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Ana Maria, but we don't give any guidance regarding any one of the two businesses that you mentioned. I mean, all of the we can say is we've given some qualitative guidance of how we think that the fourth quarter is going to move. We've given a quantitative guidance regarding of the volumes of LNG that are locked in for next year. But as far as margins is concerned and as far as total EBITDA is concerned, we don't give any guidance. So I'm sorry about that.
Our next question is from Mika Becker of Bernstein. Mika, your line is open.
Thank you very much for taking my question. Mika Becker, Bernstein, good morning to everyone. It is one question left at this point, and I'm shifting the attention a little bit on from the segments. Renewables. I was wondering if your thinking has changed over the past year, considering that we're having the strong solar boom in Spain, but also on merchant, where I was thinking with your customer portfolio, it might be interesting to go down this route on signing PPA. So it would just be great if you could elaborate if your thinking has changed or if you have sites in the pipeline, if you are looking at renewables in Spain at the moment.
I think that for us, the most important thing is the golden rule. Yeah, all investments that we do, they have to meet the investment rule. So that for us is the key criteria. I mean, and having said that, when we said that we have hedged our fixed price contracts with our inframarginal generation, that means that we are already selling to our end customers via fixed price contracts the equivalent of the energy that we are producing with our inframarginal generation.
Our final question today is a follow-up question from Alberto Gandolfi of Goldman Sachs. Alberto, please go ahead.
Thank you, first of all, for the patience, and I'll promise to be very quick. One question. Considering the big trading and in procurement division you have, and trying to here reconcile some of the quarterly moves in the debt, could you please disclose if you have a big positive variation margin cash account? So I'm trying to understand if some of your net debt is inflated or deflated maybe by this variation margin cash account, and over what time frame do you think it would basically go back to zero? Thank you.
Alberto, always nice to hear from you again. Having said that, you start with a false claim. We don't have a big trading, so since we don't have a big trading, it has no impact in the debt evolution that we're giving for this third quarter of 2019.
We have no further questions registered. I'll hand back to you.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for your patience today. As always, the capital markets team is available to answer any additional questions you may have. Thank you. Good day.